Hello, everybody. My name's Ron. I'm an addict. And just because we can, let's start with a moment of silence followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. What we're going to do in this workshop is a slideshow that shows some pictures that span through the history of Narcotics Anonymous, talk a little bit about some of the historical developments that happened along the way, and just sort of try to survey the whole thing. And I don't know how long it's going to take me. It's 4 now. This thing is done at 5. If I get done in time, then we'll do some question and answer and conversation after that. So why don't we start right out with the first slide. We like to start here and just get ourselves focused first on the vision that Narcotics Anonymous World Services has today, our vision statement today. I'm just going to read this center part of it. Our vision is that one day every addict in the world has the chance to experience our message in his or her own language and culture and find the opportunity for a new way of life. That NA communities worldwide and NA World Services work together in a spirit of unity and cooperation to carry our message of recovery. And that Narcotics Anonymous has universal recognition and respect as a viable program of recovery. This vision was adopted by the World Service Conference in 1996 as part of the World Services restructuring that was underway at that time. And we use this. The World Board, we have this up on the wall. We have this in our hearts. We read it. Most of us could probably say it to you by heart. This is what we are, as a board, really focused on. And now let's go to the next slide. I'm going to show you in a second some of the earlier vision statements. Stay back on this one. I'll show you in a little bit some of the earlier vision statements that what came alive in Narcotics Anonymous really, really early on, and you'll see how that vision has changed and yet has remained the same. But this slide right here is a picture of the obviously the U.S. Federal Narcotics Hospital at Lexington, Kentucky. And with this slide on the screen, let me just give you, just put in perspective a little bit of the atmosphere in which Narcotics Anonymous was born. If you look at a couple of just high-level significant events in AA's history, AA was first formed in 35 with just these two guys, right, Bill and Dr. Bob, and the big book of AA was published in 39, and then there was something called the Jack Alexander article published in the Saturday Evening Post, which is when AA became a known phenomenon all over the place, and AA started to explode across the country in 1941. So just those three dates for a minute, and you'll see the significant why I point those out in a second. 39, the big book was being written in 38, was published in 39, and 41 was the Jack Alexander article. So in 1941, AA starts to proliferate across the country, and so throughout the 40s, this was their period of explosive, massive growth of the fellowship. And this picture here was probably taken, I don't know, but late 30s, early 40s, sometime in the 40s. This place here, somewhere in the 40s, this place started saying, wow, that 12-step thing that's going on out there in AA, you know, for alcoholics, is really working well for alcoholics, but there's all these problems when addicts who are not alcoholics show up there and we're not having a whole lot of success with that population. At that time, there was just really no success with that population to speak of, with us, this population, you and me. And so these guys are saying, can we do something to maybe jumpstart some kind of a movement to have these 12 steps being applied for addicts? And so they began to work with the people who are in there. I don't know, what year are those cars right there? That's interesting. So they began to work with their inmate. What are they? Patients, clients, whatever you want to call them, who are addicts, and started to have what they called Addicts Anonymous meetings, AA meetings of a different sort, right? Addicts Anonymous meetings. And that name, later, there was controversy about whether that was sort of either an infringement on the AA name or of just confusion around the AA name. Or I think our fellowship would have been called Addicts Anonymous had that issue, that had that AA thing not been an issue, you know. And so they had these meetings called Addicts Anonymous. And let's go to the next slide. They had this thing called The Key. This was the publication of the U.S. Health Service Hospital at Lexington, Kentucky, beginning in the 40s. It was used to some extent by the L.A. and New York N.A. groups. The New York N.A. preceded the L.A. groups, but died out, some say, because they did not have the guidance of the 12 traditions. So that here's what the best that I can dig it up, and I've done some digging, as probably some of you have. In the 1940s, there was this guy named Danny Carlson, who was in this place. He got sent to this place 8 times, and on his 8th time, he came out, which was 1949. He got sent there in 1948, got out of there in 1949. He went back to New York in the late 40s and started something called Narcotics Anonymous in the late 40s. Now, you guys all know that we say NA was founded in Southern California in 1953. So already it's interesting. This guy comes out of there in the 40s back to New York and starts something called Narcotics Anonymous. The interesting thing was that here's another little tidbit of AA thing that's going to merge in with us here, merge into our story a little bit. The 12 traditions of AA were adopted by AA, and they were introduced to AA in 1950. And if I've got my AA facts right, they were circulated through the first half of the 50s. They were used by the groups. Bill Wilson did this big train tour around the fellowship where he tried to encourage people to adopt these new principles. And, you know, just like our fellowship, they had all these, we don't need these things. We got our 12 steps. Why do we need these kind of thing? And then there was this process of getting right with the fact that we got these new principles, and they were actually adopted by the World Service Conference in 1955. So the traditions are being born at that time, 1950 to 1955, when our fellowship was being born. And at the time that Danny Carlson went and started this thing in New York, there were no 12 traditions. There was no such thing as the 12 traditions. So that's just an interesting tidbit. The thing called Narcotics Anonymous in New York in the late 40s and early 50s was affiliated with the Salvation Army, directly affiliated with, had a chaplain who was a Catholic priest, did things over the years like lobby the legislators in New York against the Rockefeller laws, take positions on outside issues, those kinds of things that we might stand here and self-righteously say those bad people were violating the traditions. Well, they didn't, you know, we can't say that. They started before the traditions started. They were doing what they came up with to do, and they died out in the 60s completely. Jimmy Kay, there are some writings of Jimmy Kay where he said outright, to him they seemed like more like a social service agency than a 12-step fellowship, and he didn't really want much to do with them. They were a separate organization from the thing that was born in 1953 that you and I are recovering in today. This right here, this is a beautiful document. I always get this little teary-eyed feeling come up in me when I look at this. There's that bottom name right there, Jimmy Kay. This is a list of everybody who was in attendance at the first, really you might think of it as a group conscience meeting or service meeting where they were developing this thing that they were going to have called Narcotics Anonymous. When they first did this is a, you know, the notes from the meeting and the sign-in sheet that they did that day, or the list of people who were in attendance. And so Jimmy never called himself the founder of Narcotics Anonymous. Jimmy always called himself one of a group of people who got together and applied the AA model, 12 steps, 12 traditions, to the problem of drug addiction. And there's just some real interesting stuff that let's go to the next one here and see what we've got. There he is, Jimmy Kay, founding member and inspired writer, never lost his passion for the newcomer. Yeah, go ahead, Jimmy. I just got to tell you real briefly, when I hear you applaud and I get a little choked up feeling, first of all, I got clean in the late 70s in Fargo, North Dakota, the well-known mecca of Narcotics Anonymous at the time. And I was this young guy going to a meeting, and at one point I got elected as the GSR of the group. Because there was a pamphlet on the table. There was no basic text, of course. We had the little white book. And then we had this series of a few pamphlets. One of them was called the GSR. So I pick up my pamphlet called the GSR, and I'm reading it because I want to be a good GSR. Got to do this right, And it says in there, the GSR is the link between your group and Narcotics Anonymous as a whole. Well, we only had one group. And I did not know one soul on the earth who belonged to any other group of Narcotics Anonymous. So there was a phone number on the little white book, the P.O. Box 622, Sun Valley, California. Some of you remember that. And there was a phone number on there. I picked up the phone and called that phone number, and this is the man that answered the phone. And that was a relatively common thing for us back then who were in the hinterlands of N.A., pick up the phone, call the office, and Jimmy answers, and you get in these lengthy conversations with Jimmy about how's your group doing. And so I had a really heart connection to Jimmy, even though, and I did meet Jimmy. I moved to California in the mid 80s, and I saw Jimmy make his last series of appearances at Narcotics Anonymous meetings before he died, and I attended his memorial service. So I've got all of this stuff in my heart with Jimmy, as do so many people around the world. Now, this year, as a member of the board, I got sent to Bahrain to do a workshop, which I'll tell you about a little bit later. And we went to Cairo, Egypt, and we hung out with the fellowship. They call themselves the fellows. We're going to have some fellows come to pick you up, kind of thing. And so I'm hanging out with the fellows in Bahrain and Cairo. And at Bahrain, we did a workshop where I did this. I didn't do this presentation, come to think of it. I'm in the room. We had Arabic on the screen, and we just flipped through the presentation to music. So it's music and this thing, and they're reading it in Arabic. And this slide comes on the screen, and the place goes nuts. They just erupted. And I'm sitting up there. I had to put my face down in my hands. I'm crying like a baby. My tears are running down my arms. I'm telling you. And the reason was that this guy always said, we don't need any saints and big shots and he was always one to say, we don't want to do that in NA. We don't want to have like the big dog who runs the show. But he had a vision and a dream. And when he was living it, for the most part, throughout the 50s and 60s and 70s, you're talking about a relatively small movement and then a very big vision. And I'm thinking, if he could have seen those guys with their Arab headdresses and the room that we were in and people speaking Arabic, seeing his picture and going bananas like they did, I'm thinking, man, I wish he could have seen where his vision was going, because it certainly went somewhere. Let's keep going. And it's still going somewhere. This right here, let me just read this middle thing, because you can really see where the hearts and minds were. Dated October 5th, 1953. Oh, by the way, in the early going, the first name that our fellowship actually had by that the previous document we were looking for was AANA. They wanted to name it Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous. And they wanted it to be a fellowship where it was for the drug addict, but, we wanted the alcoholic there to kind of help us get the message kind of thing. They sent a letter to the GSO in New York and said, can we do that? This is the name we propose, and this is the form of the traditions. And they say, yeah, you go ahead and take the 12 steps, 12 traditions, modify them to suit your needs. We support you, but you're a different fellowship than us. Please stand on your own two feet. Don't use our name. And don't call yourselves in any way affiliated with us. So they got it right off the bat, and God bless them the way they helped launch us. They didn't say, "Yeah, okay, yeah, let's all be in the same car." They said, "You got a car? I know it's a new car. You're building it still. Build your car, and we'll help you if we can." It says here, "Our precepts are patterned after those of Alcoholics Anonymous, to which all credit is given and precedence is acknowledged. We claim no originality, but since we believe that the causes of alcoholism and addiction are basically the same, we wish to apply to our lives the truths and principles which have benefited so many otherwise helpless individuals. We believe that by so doing, we may regain and maintain our health and sanity." Now, there's a lot. Yeah, that's okay. You know, there's a lot. It's interesting always in our literature. Somebody said in the last workshop in here, to see how things evolve a little bit and change, how our thinking shifts a little bit. We don't really talk like this anymore. The causes of alcoholism and addiction are basically the same. We kind of now say that addiction is addiction, and that includes alcoholism. And that's all this stuff about language and not separating and all that is really about saying the way that we have refocused the steps to place the emphasis on powerlessness over our addiction is all inclusive of that. So we wouldn't say it's the same thing as that. We would just say that's included in this, you know, kind of thing. But let's go to the next one. Here it is. This is the picture of where the place called Dad's Hall, the site of the first NA meeting in 1953. So, inauspicious beginning, but there it is. That's where we started. Good question. I don't know the answer to that. Clint, so next time you're in LA, go to, you know, MapQuest.com. Pantera and Clybourne. I'm going to do it now that you put that idea in my head. All right, let's go to the next one. Shire's Dryer. And I find it interesting always when this is translated into other languages, if they can get to this concept. Shire's Dryer. But it was a detox center on Ventura Boulevard in the 50s. The site of NA meetings where Bob B. found the only NA meeting in the world. Now that's one of the stories in our basic text. And this is where he walked in that door, the only NA meeting in the world. And now, in the 1950s, there was only one NA meeting. That meeting moved a couple of times. There was sometimes what they called rabbit meetings, as I understand the story, where, you know, some of you, if you're from New York, you know that NA in New York really only got its start in the early 80s. And the reason that it really only got launched at that point was that there were no drug addicts in New York prior to 1980. No. I think that wasn't it. What it was is they had these things called the Rockefeller Laws, right, which said it was illegal for one addict to congregate with another addict. So for all intents and purposes, NA meetings were illegal. And that's not unique to New York. I remember when NA was really trying to get started in Mexico, the same thing was true. Every time they tried to get an NA meeting started, we had known addicts congregating. That simply won't do. How could that possibly work? You know, you're putting dope fiends together, what? And so those rabbit meetings were really about, as I understand that story, the cops were really kind of giving NA a hard time all the time. They would park outside the door of NA meetings. And so you could not be, and that's where that language comes in our early literature. We are under no surveillance at any time. That was about reassuring people who had some early experience with NA that's not happening anymore. Because they had one of the first PR successes in NA was when that early 50s meeting, when they went and spoke to the sheriff and said, you know, they had some conversation with him saying, helped him to understand what we were doing here. And they got to the point where he said, okay, I'll back off. We'll back off. I'll tell my guys to stay away from your meetings. And they didn't have to have the little rabbit meetings, which were meetings held at your house, and then we called everybody, and now they're at my house, and we called everybody, and they're at their house. And so anyway, Shire's Dryer was, the second meeting place, but still only one meeting in the world. This meeting right here was started in about 1960 or 61, I believe 1960. And it's on the Unitarian Church on Rhodes and Moore Park in Studio City, and that is there. And so sometimes when, like during the World Service Conference last time, I brought some people from out of the country and we went and sat in the parking lot of this church and just There it is, you know, one of the earliest meetings. But let's go to the next slide and let me show you what's significant about this meeting. This was the meeting format of that meeting. And as I understand it, this is one of several as it morphed along the way. But let's look at this. At the end of the meeting, the leader will read the 12 traditions and then have the secretary report. All of the accounts that you read of NA during the 1950s, there were two strong personalities that were kind of vying for the leadership role. There were more, but two kind of emerge as always. One of them is a guy named Cy M, and the other is a guy named Jimmy K. And Cy, by all accounts, was a really strong personality. I was reading some discussion from Jimmy recently where he was saying, see this stuff here, this is a fifth step type meeting, which enables us to talk at gut level. There was no cross discussion. We try here to keep our talk to the past week's happenings and try to communicate primarily with ourselves. So it was, and there was this meeting format that they used in the 50s a lot of times was a kind of a confrontation meeting. Guy in the center in the chair and everybody's, you know, giving, you know, kind of hardcore stuff. And there's even speculation, and I've seen it in a few different documents where people speculated that Synanon and some of those efforts really came out of some of the way NA carried itself early on, kind of hardcore confrontational stuff, and it wasn't really, and that was the kind of style that Cy favored, and Cy also didn't really think this thing about the traditions was that big a deal, wasn't that important. So there was a lot of ways in which they carried themselves in the 50s that you wouldn't consider consistent with the traditions. And this right here, and NA, by the way, died out briefly in 1959. They got to 1950, and Jimmy had stayed away from the meeting. He said he would pop in once in a while if he had a newcomer and he really wanted to get him to a meeting where he could relate. But for the most part, he was kind of pissed. He wasn't happy with the way they were running the meetings. He wanted the 12 steps, the 12 traditions, no big kahunas, to use the local vernacular, no star, just us carrying the message to the addict who still suffers. That was his vision, and he didn't think that they were carrying themselves that way. And so that effort at NA actually briefly died out. And then there were people like Jimmy and others who said, okay, let's go in now and start a meeting and do it another way, and that was this meeting. So this is the very first meeting in the history of NA where the 12 traditions were read during the meeting. And ever since that day, ever since this meeting was started and the traditions were brought to the front of the car, you know, and we said, let's operate on the basis of these traditions, NA has never stopped, never died out again and never stopped growing. So, That meeting, as I understand it started in 1960. It could be 61, but I think it was 1960. I think it was right after this late 1959 collapse, and then this meeting started up. And I also am of the understanding from a few people that, that Shire's Dryer thing. Some of you guys have meetings in your local area, I just know it, that meet in the local treatment center or detox center, that are fuzzy around whether they're an NA meeting or a meeting of that place, and do they want to be listed in the directory, and we don't think they ought to be, and blah, blah, and how do we... And this stuff becomes very controversial. How do we, you know, affiliation with the facility that we're in, especially when that facility is in the business of treating addicts for addiction. And that Shire's Dryer meeting, that was one of the objections Jimmy had to that whole thing, was that it was a bit too much in bed with that facility. But so anyway, that was part of getting out of there, getting into a neutral location, and starting to operate on the basis of the traditions. This is the 1962 little white book. I thought, I just love this. It was actually in print. We keep it, we have only with vigilance, as just as freedom from the individual. They actually wrote it. Everybody reads it that way, right? They actually wrote it that way one time. Oops, and then they fixed it, you know. And just, here's a tidbit for you that I haven't mentioned in this presentation before. Did you know that this language right here, we keep it, we have only with vigilance, and just as freedom for the individual comes from the 12 steps, so freedom for the group springs from our traditions. That language was written by Bill Wilson and published in the Grapevine in the 50s. And when we had wrote our stuff, we just snatched it right out of there. Except he said, He said, we keep what we have only with vigilance, and just as freedom for the individual comes from the 12 steps, so freedom, wait a minute, oh, as long as the ties that bind us together are stronger than the forces that would tear us apart, all will be well. And so that was the only difference, but that exact language came out of the AA Grapevine. We dropped the word forces and said those, which some people would say the 13th tradition says, when reinventing the wheel, make sure it's always at least slightly oval. And for some reason, we the forces that would tear us apart might have made more sense than the ties that would tear us apart, but never mind that. All right, let's go to the next. This is the history of the little white book, starting here, going this way. It really was almost like a little meeting directory with a few little statements of what NA was in the early days. And then this one here, as I understand it, This Is NA, was developed by the Northern California Fellowship sometime when that, you know, there's the whole story of there was somebody created a detox center, a treatment center, a recovery house, or whatever you want to call it, in Northern California. And a lot of NA members went and became part of that. And that's part of how NA really grew strong in Northern California. And they were having NA is going to be NA. And there was always, as I get the stories, some level of conflict, north to south wars, why can't you get us our little white books a little faster than that? Or, you know, blah, blah, blah. And they developed their own. And they called it This Is NA. And that lasted a little while, and then, yeah, there we go. The forces that would tear us apart, yes, the ties. I'm tied to this version of the little white book. You know. Anyway, it just kept morphing and morphing. See this, the way it's got a little cross on it here? Little cross. Boom, the cross is gone. And see this newly revised here? This would have been 1986, because this is the one would have been in place up to 1986, but in 1986 there were changes made to the little white book when that was all, there was some thought that perhaps some of the language in the little white book, somewhat like I said before, when you look at how they talk about alcoholism it was something like, who remembers that we are people with the, I can't remember right now, but it says who were strongly susceptible to alcoholic addiction. That's how it described us. Strongly susceptible to alcoholic addiction. And so that kind of language was thought to be still kind of supporting the idea that alcoholism is something else. You know, so there was a movement afoot to make some changes to the Little White Book, which happened in 1960. And then we called it Newly Revised. And that led to the third edition revised basic text because, as you probably know, all the italicized portions of the basic text at the top are just reprints of what's in the little white book. So when the little white book was changed, that led to a change in the basic text. And they had a conversation as NA was proliferating around the world and there were more non-American groups popping up. I think for us, I personally would say I never noticed anything there at all. But some people said, that looks a bit like a Christian symbol there. Like it's already tough enough for us to sell this thing, and that it ain't a Christian deal in some places of the world, that do we have to be flying that flag, you know? And so some people decided to make that change. I mean, the conference decided to make that change. And by the way, none of that is in any way anti-Christian. It's saying, let's make sure we're inclusive of whatever you believe, because we're not here to tell you what you ought to believe. And so then we keep on going up to here, which is what the little white book looks like again today. All right, let's keep going. And that little white book, by the way, and this is a good slide to have on the screen when I say that. Some of you, many of you, I see Gino over there from Houston. There's plenty of you in here with more clean time than me who remember when that was it. You know, that was Narcotics Anonymous. You had a raggedy ass little white book in your back pocket, and those were the readings that you read at the NA meetings, which had their own character and their own feel, and that was a pretty damn big deal. And once we had that little white book, I can say this: you had, once you had a little white book, once you had something in writing, now you had a post office address. Like I was saying, here I'm in Fargo, North Dakota, and there's a post office address and a phone number. You got a place to call, and you have a way of having a meeting that's an NA meeting. And it was, and just because that existed, NA started to proliferate. So let's go to the next slide. This is, you see the Capitol Records building there in Hollywood? You can see that one from, you sort of give you a little sense of place there. But this is the Yucca and Gower meeting, the second regular and stable NA group formed in 1962. So this was the point at which there were two NA meetings, that 62. That meeting in the 50s that eventually started again in Studio City was the only NA meeting in the world. When this one started, we had, you know, an area, I guess, you know, an NA community. We had more than one meeting. And so that only dates back to the early 60s. The Board of Trustees were first formed around 63, 64. Not very active, but it was amazing that we had a Board of Trustees when we were just a couple of groups. So if you think about that, that's where you really see. I was saying before about our vision, the vision that we have today, that felt like a stretch to us when we were writing it, and is now we're seeing it realized every day in what we were in what we're doing. This one here, the existence of this document says to me that those people in the early 60s, when there were two groups and maybe three groups, and you know the thing was starting, they began to envision a worldwide organization. They began to say, look at this. This works for us. We relate to each other. We want you to have this in, you know, BFE or wherever you live. And so that to me is the exciting thing about this. It's just amazing to me looking back on this that you got two meetings and you got a document that's talking about a board of trustees for a worldwide organization. Let's go. Walla Walla, Washington, 1963, really kind of the birth of H&I. Probably more accurately, the birth of the institutional group, because there was H&I. I mean, I'll tell you this. I don't care where you live or what year it is. If there is Narcotics Anonymous, there is H&I. You know, if there is Narcotics Anonymous, there are people who care about those guys, those women locked up behind those bars, and have a strong place in our heart to go and get this message to them, because you know who you are. So, all right, let's go to the next one. One of the first NA meetings east of the Rockies was in 1969 in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And by the way, Addicts Anonymous, Philadelphia? All right. Go back again. By the way, Addicts Anonymous, that thing that was started, that kept starting up in Lexington, found a home in Philadelphia. And some of you may know that story better than I do, but there was actually a fairly strong current of Addicts Anonymous groups that lived and breathed in Philadelphia for many years. And there was an NA community and an Addicts Anonymous community both there. I remember hearing of that even when I was clean, that they were still there. I don't know if they still are or not. I really don't know if they do or not. If someone says they think they still exist. So, all right, let's go to the next one. Oldest ongoing meeting. I could have sworn it was in Moorhead, Minnesota at Christ the King Lutheran Church, but back up one more. Yeah. But this is what this one beats it. Friday nights, Manhattan Beach, California, still meets at the same church as it did in the mid-1960s. Now, I've never been to this meeting, but since I've seen this slide, I'm going to this meeting. All right. Let's go to the next one. This thing here touches me right here, because I used to get this. I subscribed to this the very first time I ever heard about this. It says there in the early 80s, I guess. Oh, until the early 80s, I was going to say. I seem to remember it earlier than that. But it used to come to our house. And, you know, I don't know. You know, when you talk about the history of NA, there's certain things that have to be acknowledged that we sometimes would rather not acknowledge. Like, for example, most people went to AA and most people read the big book and blah, 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 because that's what you had. You know, that's what you had. If you lived in a town where there was one NA meeting a week and you had no literature, you know, you had the little white book, you probably went other places. So I had occasion to see the AA Grapevine, for example, nice, slick, produced piece of, you know, with all the stories and stuff. So I thought, oh, I want to get the NA Grapevine. So I sent away to the World Service Office, and I got this in the mail. And I went, I love NA. This is it, man. This is it right here. We read this thing, there's typos all over the place. And you know, they didn't have time to fix it before they reproduced it, so they scratched it out and wrote in the margin. And but you know what? It was addicts helping addicts, and it was us, you know, and I loved it. And just as a side note to that, when they decided to put this thing to bed and create something called the NA Way magazine, and they decided to take that into the World Service Office and publish that, when NA World Services decided to publish it out of the office, they went in search of an editor for that, and they found me, and I went to work for them in 1984 as the first editor of the NA Way magazine. So, this thing even, I mean, I'm sort of a litwit, as they say, so this thing even touches me more. Let's go to the next one. This logo has a very interesting history. Let's say designed by Jimmy in early 60s, and it's got all this symbolism and all that. But here's what I think is interesting, that this was lost to us. You may know the story of how painful it was in that early going when, you know, the basic text was coming around there was an atmosphere of unbelievable controversy within NA World Services. There was the World Service Office Board of Directors, there was a Board of Trustees, and there was amazing infighting, and the office was asserting its independence, that the World Service Conference doesn't really have any direct control over us, and the conference was saying, oh yes, we do, and the trustees are caught in the crossfire, and the, you know, blah, blah. There was a lot, there's a whole story there to be told, which I really don't have the time to go into, but let's just say that this one ended. That story didn't end. That story, one of the sad chapters of that story was that Jimmy Kinnon was replaced as the manager or the executive director of the World Service Office when a man named Bob Stone was hired. And there was some just really clumsy handling of that situation, to where Jimmy one day walks into the World Service Office and Bob Stone is in there. And he's got the keys, and he's changed the locks, and he's working. And Jimmy looks at him, and Jimmy's never been told that this decision was made. And it really, really deeply hurt him. And he felt really... And picture again this in the middle of this personality war, of which Jimmy was a real live player. I mean, you know, he was, you know... And so he took this as just such a slap in the face. And what was supposed to have happened, he understood that this might happen, but what was supposed to have happened is he was supposed to have been communicated that over the weekend, and then Bob was supposed to come in and take over, and that was never communicated to him. Jimmy got so pissed that he packed up his stuff, and he had a lot of the archives of Narcotics Anonymous still in his home. He took the stuff that was his, he left. They gave him a copy machine to please make copies of whatever he wants and then turn over the archives to NA World Services. He never did that. He never gave the archives back. He said, basically, you know, F you. And, you know, and the archives of Narcotics Anonymous were unavailable to the fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous for a number of years. Jimmy then died, and his family owned those archives. And his family, at some point along the way, his family put those archives on the market for sale to the highest bidder. And World Services was very, very certain that it wanted to be the highest bidder and paid $50,000 for the archives. And the archives went back to the office. And now And so, and then that, by the way, was where we created, that was about 99-ish, I think, in the 2000 World Service Conference. Remember this coffee table book called Miracles Happen? That was an effort to say, okay, look what we dug up, you know, and to say, let's show some of this to the fellowship. Let's make this available now. And so that book, Miracles Happen, which if you guys are sitting in here, probably means you have some interest in the NNA history. You'll love that book. It lays out a lot of what I'm talking about in a lot of detail. What's that? There were revisions made to Miracles Happen because some of us, I'll put myself in this category because I was one of the warriors in that battle, some of us felt that there were statements being made in that book that were a little bit of a stretch beyond what our 10th tradition would have us being made. There were discussion of issues that were, some of us considered outside issues, and made a strong play to say, let's not talk about our opinions on what else was going on around in the field of addiction and drugs and all that in a piece of NA literature. And so they went through it and pulled out various sentences that were felt to be a little bit of a stretch beyond what we should be having an opinion about, took them out and republished the book that way. It was republished, I believe. See, I was elected to the board in 2000, and I think it was the 2004 World Service Conference, just recently, very recently. Am I? That's true. That's right. Okay. I think you're wrong about, I know you're wrong about the revision, but you're right about the rest. Because I was involved in the revision directly, and I wasn't elected to the board until 2000. So I know that the revision came either 2002 or 2004. But what, that's Gordon, by the way, who was, were you the chair, were you of the convention that occurred in San Jose? On the committee? I just considered you the big kahuna, I'm sorry, you know, whatever you were. You know. But anyway. I don't believe that it's for sale here, but it's in the end. Sold out. Okay. Let me get back on track. Yeah, eBay. No, it can be bought at, it's in the World Service Office inventory and in the catalog. Okay. Yes, but it's whited out. So it means God as I understand it and deal with it, I guess. You know? I don't know why it's whited out, but it is. But anyway, this was lost to us until that this was lost to us until that we got those archives. And then when we I would call them all the archives, the things that were of NA history. All right, let's go to the next one. You know what my favorite aspect of this slide is? This thing. What is that? What do you think? Compass point. It's, you know, that little compass, you stick it and you make a perfect circle. That stands to me as proof that this is the original. This is the one that Jimmy actually drew. Jimmy himself drew this circle around 1968. It says there, while he was in the hospital with tuberculosis. That's another significant part of the story, is that Jimmy was in the hospital, in and out of the hospital with TB for years. So there were long stretches of time when Bob Barrett was the office manager, if you will, Jack Bernstein did it for years. There were other people involved in this besides Jimmy. Jimmy is just often cited as, you know, like the earliest and this kind of stalwart, diehard who you know, sick or well, kept coming back to, you know, to, and really cared a lot about this thing and so you know, it's kind of held in a special place of reverence from a lot of us. All right, let's go to the next one. The NA service symbol, designed by Jimmy in 1971. Let's go to the next one. The first WSO was Bob Barrett's home on Crenshaw. We're going to kind of move a little bit quickly now because I think most of the things I really wanted to expand on were there. So this was a first floor of the room served as storage for, as a meeting place for the Board of Trustees. So, you know, in those early years, let's go to the next one. I think the next one's also, oh, I'll stop there for a second. But in those early years, there were, the World Service Office, you know, was in the trunk of Bob's car, you know, the, or in his house, and Jimmy's house for years. Mm-hmm. Okay, so this letter here, here's an interesting letter. This document right here is very significant in the history of Narcotics Anonymous. Let's read it. And then this 1971 letter from the Board of Trustees inviting members to the First World Convention, 1971 letter, First World Service Conference, and the birth really of the World Service Office, because they were talking about, you know, electing a central office manager. So this was a 1971 was a kind of turning point where they said, let's take this to the next level. Let's have a conference like some other fellowship has. Let's have a board of trustees. We had a board of trustees. Let's have a convention where we invite delegates from around the world. It says here, the principal purpose of this conference is to get together delegates from NA groups in all localities, both the U.S. and other countries, to establish an NA World Central Office, elect a paid full-time business manager, and to be in charge of this office, et cetera, et cetera. So you might think of this as the event that propelled all of that, that took it at all to the next place. Let's go to the next one. And this, at La Mirada Country Club, was the very first, this is the actual program of that event that was being talked about in that letter. Okay.
$5 registration.
Yeah. Oh, no. Johnny, I told you to cover up that $5 registration part. Okay. First WCNA 1. Okay. See what I mean by, though, about typos and writings in the margin and stuff? We were still kind of at that level. This was knocked off on a typewriter.
The one you just read, the other one, didn't have no typos on it. I was wondering, that's what I was just thinking about. Why was that one so neat?
That is a really good question.
Yeah.
That is really good. And that's the kind of thing that we sometimes think about and you go back and go, okay, it's like, but it's a good question. Okay, so let's go to the next one, the next slide. This right here was the site of the Second World Convention in 1976. Oh, okay. Well, Johnny just told me, as he lives in Southern California and I don't, that there's currently an NA meeting in that location. Okay. This is just a sign that used to be outside the World Service Office. When they did, a couple of times they would take it out of the house, you know, and move it to a storefront location where you had a coffee machine and all the fancy stuff. And so Jack tells me he used to go there regular, you know, in the morning, open this place up. And they were just sort of it was a teamwork thing. Sometimes Bob might do it, sometimes Jack might do it. And it was during the time when Jimmy was really sick. So let's go to the next one. 1976. Now, remember what I said about the 71 letter? Birth of the conference, birth of the, let's get delegates from around the world. Now let's read this. In 76, it identified itself as the Sixth World Convention, which makes sense, right? And also the First World Service Conference. So I thought that 1971 letter, and I used to do this presentation and go, okay, I don't know. It's a mystery. I don't know. Until I did it in front of the right people who came and schooled me afterwards and helped me to understand what went on was, this was the time when the NA tree was developed. So they wrote a service structure for NA. They developed a worldwide structure, which really was more of a vision of a structure that would be. It wasn't a description of a structure that existed, right? Because there wasn't really that kind of a thing. And so in this new structure, just adopted, was something called the World Service Conference with these delegates. So even though that meeting that was kicked off in 1971 did occur and people were invited to it, it was really still mostly a local organizational meeting with a vision of being a World Service Conference. And when they put the tree in place, then the next conference they had to say, okay, this is the World Service Conference. And that we still measure as the first World Service Conference. And the conference has been meeting ever since. Now, there's a story about this World Service Conference that I think is pretty fascinating. And there's someone in the room who could probably tell it better than I, but since I have the mic, I'm going to tell it. Remember I said Northern California, Southern California. And, you know, a lot of love and a lot of the rest of what we do when we have, you know, more than one entity in Narcotics Anonymous. And so they were kind of battling. You know, they would have the World Convention at once in the north and another time in the south, and then they would, you know, go back and forth. And they were in a real battle about you know, who gets to have this convention. And some addicts from Houston, Texas showed up at this convention in 1976. And at that time, there was a bidding process at the end of the World Convention. And so that whoever got the bid would take it next time. Well, these addicts from Houston showed up, and they say, we'll take it. We want it in Houston, right? And so I don't know what due diligence, what fire their feet was held to show that they could pull off a World Convention. Gino is sitting over here. Gino, raise your hand there in the front. That's Gino. He was the program chair of that convention. And as I hear the story, and therefore tell the story, and I've actually talked to Gino about this also, they were lucky they had a fellowship in Houston, Texas, really. I mean, they did. They had some groups. It was pretty small, but it was like a lot of other startup NA communities in 1977. Not really a world convention happening kind of place. But they got this convention. The 1977 convention was held in Houston, Texas. And they what's that? 78? He's right. 77, San Francisco. So I got the wrong thing on the screen. I'm telling the whole story about the wrong year, but you still get the story, right? You're absolutely right. Thank you, Gino. But you know, this always happens. I have an imperfect memory, so I like to think you have to have a lot of cojones to stand up here in front of a crowd like this and tell this history story and get straightened out on a regular basis. But, no, that's right. That was the 77 convention where all this happened, and it was placed in 78, then 79 in Atlanta, and 80 in Wichita, and the rest is history. And, well, does anyone know the answer to that? 86, someone said? 96? 96, yeah. 96. Makes sense. I don't know. Okay. So the Board of Trustees adopted the NA tree in 76. And so I've already talked about that. Let's jump to the next one. Greg Pierce. And the reason some of you who didn't applaud, you know, you didn't maybe know this guy, but Greg was a big player in the early going of our fellowship. He wrote the NA tree. He was, he sponsored a lot of guys. He was just a really all heart and soul, kind of committed member of Narcotics Anonymous, very involved in a lot of what went on in those times. Very close to Jimmy. There's actually a rift between Greg and Jimmy that's sort of legendary at some point too. But anyway, Greg passed away in 1999, and in fact, passed away during the World Service Conference in 1999. Let's go to the next one. Jimmy's house. Somebody mentioned earlier that the office was, I said it. Sometimes it was in a storefront, and it was back to the house. This was the house. At the time that the basic text was about to be published, the World Service Office was still at Jimmy's house. Okay, let's go to the next one. A bunch of pamphlets that were... This is about what was on the table in 1976. So that's about what we had. And some of these are reprints of the little white book. Let's go to the next one. The first seven... Okay. See, I told that whole story with the wrong slide on the screen. The first seven world conventions were in California when a few addicts came from the tiny fellowship in Houston, Texas, showed up at the 77 WCNA and bid for the next year's convention. They got it, and for the first time, plans were made to hold the convention outside of California. So that Now we are thousands. Let's go to the next one. Okay. German little white book, mid-1970s, we started seeing NA translations being born. NA, you know, non-English speaking communities starting to develop translations. I'm out of time really to tell you any more, regale you with any more stories that are probably, you know, semi-factually incorrect, but there were a lot of, a lot of difficulties around this German translation. In the group, just this one little fact, in the group, the pamphlet, the group, it used to say the front line, so to speak, of Narcotics Anonymous is the NA group. And we had this translated by some professional translator, and they used the word for front lines. I don't speak German, so I don't know what it was, but they used the word that really implied when Hitler was advancing in Europe. The word that they used for that, the front lines, and so we blundered into that one, and the German fellowship was just livid.
Blitzkrieg?
Probably, maybe that was it. But they had the Blitzkrieg, so to speak. So they were just livid, and we had, you know, we've really come a long way with translations. We've got that process down. Let's go to the next one. Valley College, local college in San Fernando, where the World Service Conference was held for a year through 1981. Well, before that it was, I guess, the Retail Clerks Union Hall, but this was one of the sites of it. Let's go to the next one. The gray form of the basic text, some of you, like me, have that in your house. I mean, when I was earlier in my recovery, we're bopping along and we get a package in the mail and it's got a bunch of those. It says distribute them to your members, and you know, we're taking input. We're writing a basic text for NA. Here's where we are so far. Give us input. That's what we got in the mail. Let's go to the next one. The one on the right there, the one that looks like the little white book, was the approval form. Once that input was incorporated and we got to the form of the basic text we have today. The other one is the stories section. So let's go to the next one. There's Jimmy addressing the World Service Conference It says 82, but this is an old slide. I think we found out that that's not the correct date. Because these guys here were... This, by the way, is Susan. Anybody recognize Susan Chess, who's at this convention here? Bobby Raymar, some of you might know him. Bob Stone, Jimmy Kennan, George Holohan. So that's some of the players back then, and Jimmy addressing the conference. Let's go to the next one. Who has one of these in your possession? We have some back there. This one here cost $25. It was produced by... Excuse me. No, I don't think that's me this time. It cost $25, and it was produced by... Sold as a kind of a known to be a collector's item, and the idea was we didn't have any money to produce a basic text when this thing was published. So we created one, we sold it for $25, that raised the money to create the other one. So this was the first edition basic text. Now why does nobody have this one? Let's go to the next slide and let's see. Okay, here's all the versions of the basic text. And shit, I'm out of time. Okay. The first. Okay, real quickly. No. Real quick. First edition here. I told you about these two. Now, here's what happened with the basic text. This is NA in its purest form. The basic text is going to print, and it says it in the fourth and ninth editions. It says in it the service structure is not part of Narcotics Anonymous. So people go, well, wait a minute, if it's not part of Narcotics Anonymous, then are we lending the NA name to it? Are we accepting money from it as a gift? That won't do. Let's fix it. They fixed it. They took that language out of there and they published it. Hits the fellowship. The literature committee goes apeshit. You did what? We have an approved basic text and you changed it on the way to the printer? Excuse me? No. Change it back. They changed it back. Second edition basic text. Then they say, okay, now let's look at what you changed. No, you're right, that's a good change. Third edition basic text. Okay, and then we do the little white book changes. That's the third edition revised basic text when they were incorporated. And some people said, okay, that went pretty well. Let's do that again, but let's do a kind of a light edit, grammar, punctuation look at the basic text. We did that, and the manuscripts that were used, it was all typed up because we didn't have it in word processors at the time. It was all typed up. The manuscript is handed to the World Literature Committee for them to use, and to the editor. The editor makes all of their changes in basic text against this, but there's all kinds of problems. They made fairly significant changes. Turns out the manuscript was flawed. The manuscript that they typed up had things missing, was all screwed up, that's the one that the literature committee was using to compare the edits to. So the literature committee was satisfied that those were all good changes. It goes out to the fellowship, and they go apeshit. They say, what do you mean? We said a light edit of grammar and punctuation. So that goes back to the WSO. I was working at the WSO at the time. We go through it. We read it line by line, and we go apeshit. It's like, I can't believe that this happened. And so we fixed it, fifth edition, basically. And then at the next conference, there was a motion passed. Can we have a five-year moratorium on all changes to the basic text? Because we went through that many editions of the basic text in that many years.
What year did you do
the fifth? The fifth, I believe, was... You're an expert up there, goddammit. You tell me. No, I think it was... I think it was 1980... No, it wasn't 83, because 86 is when the little white book changes were incorporated. So it would have been about 87, 88, maybe? 87? Something like that. Okay, so so this moratorium was passed twice in a row. There were 2 5-year moratoriums that were passed. When the third 5-year moratorium was proposed, it didn't pass. And they said, time to look and see if not that we need to change the text, but to stop putting moratoriums on changes. So now we're working on a 6th edition basic text. Let's go to the next slide. Okay, fellowship growth. Let's just really kind of hammer through these slides now and just sort of look at them. This is just pictures of the early WSO, the one that I went to work for. Go to the next one. There's Bob Stone. He was the former executive director of the WSO. Let's keep going. This convention was the first time the World Convention ever left the United States and was held in another country in 1986 in London. The 12 concepts, work began in the mid-1980s. It was adopted at the 1992 conference. Next. Sydney, Australia, the first time the convention was held in the Asia-Pacific zone. And speaking of history, the convention you're sitting at right now is one that we're going to be talking about when we talk about the history of Narcotics Anonymous. The second one in the Asia-Pacific zone, the one in 2005. This is a historic convention, the first fully bilingual world convention that was held in Cartagena, Colombia. Some of you were there in 2000. These are just some pictures. NA celebrated 20 years in Japan in 2000. The Japanese Fellowship, on all these 20 years, has never had a book. The Japanese Fellowship has now just completed work on a basic text. They're about to have a book. Chinese literature. We went to China recently. We just did a translation of some of our literature to kind of try to get NA jump started in China. Let's go. Narcotics Anonymous today. The conference. This is where the conference is being held now. See how it's got risers on the side, and it's really actually pretty cool. We do in one side of the conference we do business, and then we all move to another room with round tables. And we have a more of a conversation, fellowship development type discussions, not just all hardcore business sessions. This was San Diego. Many of you were there. That was a phenomenal convention. Remember this thing? My heart skipped a beat. Look up there, top of the convention center, there's the NA flag right next to it. They're like flying like that. This is just a picture of fellowship growth. This over here is 1983, 2003. Steady growth, a little blip over here, but steady growth. This is the World Service Conference now. And this is really where you're talking big warehouse, big forklifts, big. Turn off all the lights at night. There's a little, you can walk through the the warehouse just on the glow of the 1 year key tags alone. It's really cool. This is NA World Services, and of course we like to play Where's Waldo? Go to the next one. The WSO gets hundreds of letters each week from all over the world. Johnny works, by the way, for the Fellowship Services team of the WSO, and these guys are getting, like it says here, hundreds of communications from addicts all over the world. They're in constant communication with this fellowship. This is one of the big efforts that the WSO does. Let's go to the next one. Our message in print, just picture of all the stuff we have now compared to looking back in the little white book way back when. This is NA members in Bali. So, and some of these people are like, she's from Australia, and she works at the WSO, and she lives in Hawaii, and she lives in New Zealand. And so there's a lot of members there, but this is something we do a lot of. One of the things we do the most of now in World Services is we go to places and meet with the local fellowship there and help them with fellowship development stuff. Sarajevo, don't fuck with any of these guys. Remember? I don't think we're taping this one. See, those other ones are being taped. Members gathered for NA service. This is the Philippines up here. Down here, this is the convention I was talking about a little while ago where I was at. This guy's here at this convention here. There was one done here, and there was one done in St. Petersburg, Russia, where what we did is we located all Arabic-speaking NA communities everywhere that we knew there was one. We got one or two or three or four people from that community. We flew them to a central location in Bahrain, in this case. The other case, St. Petersburg, it was a Russian-speaking thing. We flew some experienced members in from the States or other countries, people who could help them with fellowship. And we had a workshop all week long on everything. What's that? At this one, there was one woman from Iran. And if I would love to tell you about Iran, but I'm not going to. Let's go to the next one. Worldwide workshops. This is Bangalore, India, Burbank, California. We've been having these workshops all over the world the last few years. This is just a picture of something like you're doing now on the bus, but this one is in Uruguay. This is in South Africa where we went recently. Just images and language from NA from all over the world here. It truly is, let me tell you, it truly is a worldwide fellowship. And they feel, I can tell you that if you're an addict in Kuwait, or if you're an addict in, you know, bumfuck or wherever, I can say that because I went to Egypt this year. The bumfuck meetings are awesome. But anyway, it doesn't matter. You feel the way you feel. Anyway, well, I'm running over. Thank you for your attention. That was cool. Thank you.